Hello, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Vlad Sedler. I am joined for part two of our off-season review with my colleague and back-to-back auction champion, Mike Mager, a.k.a. Bronx Yankees 23. Mike, what's happening? Happy New Year.
To you too, bud, and to all our listeners. Thanks. Looking forward to this. You know, we had a great time doing the American League, but we ran out of time, and so let's rock and roll the National League.
Yeah, we're going to jump right into it. We've got 15 NL teams to review, look at all of their off-season transactions, trades, who they left behind and didn't sign and declined and added. And so we're going to go through all of those, of course, from the typical fantasy lens that we do. Before we do that, wanted to remind you or let you know, in case you don't know, that we are running a promotion for everything FTN Fantasy. But if you're looking to get some of our baseball content right now, we have a code for 15% off. The code is FTN2026, FTN2026. That's good until January 2nd, and that'll be 15% off. And our stuff is loaded, as always. We've got the active redraft roto rankings, aka the VDP 500. Our projections are in full swing. We've got incredible tools, a whole slew of top-notch content from a lot of the best high-stakes minds around. So come join us. Oh, underdog rankings as well. Those have just been updated if you're doing into the best ball. And that's ftnfantasy.com. So join in. Mike, what do you have coming up, by the way, in this in these next few weeks as far as content?
I think we're going to do an article on the player pool, kind of taking an overview of the recent player pool by position, kind of go through where we see that. And then I'm drawing a blank on what we have next. Oh yeah, I'm going to do an auction primer. We did the DC primer a couple weeks ago, and we're going to work on a primer for folks in auctions that definitely will be helpful for people just kind of getting their feet wet into auctions, but hopefully be of some assistance to more experienced auction folks as well.
Yeah, and a lot of good stuff coming in February, a lot more draft strategy related stuff you'll get from Mike Mager. Article on player share diversification. The one you wrote last year was pretty awesome. A little bit of Kentucky Derby, Kentucky KDS and draft mapping, preparing for main event, how to manage your bench, lots of good stuff there. I'm working on my late round profitable hitters, the article that I come out with every year around December, January, and then I'll start getting into the tiers by position. So lots of really good stuff coming your way. So let's talk about the National League. We'll start in the NL East with the Atlanta Braves. And the Braves, they have a really good base of hitters and pitchers. It's a squad that probably can do a lot of damage if they stay healthy. They're always contenders or should be contenders and should be in the mix. And I'm looking at this lineup 1-9. It looks pretty spicy. On the pitcher side, they added Robert Suarez, who was an elite closer for the Padres the last couple seasons. They picked up Joel Piamps to strengthen their bullpen, pitching there from Milwaukee. And then on the hitter side, that little weird thing with Ha-Seong Kim, where they declined and then signed him. Mike Yastrzemski coming over, kind of a lot older than I thought. He kind of was a late bloomer to begin with. And then Mr. Multi-Positionality guy Mauricio Dubon will help kind of strengthen the bench. But the team is loaded. Hopefully you got Acuna healthy from the start of the year. Cross fingers, of course. Austin Riley should be good to go. Matt Olson. I mean, Profar, hopefully not suspended again. The offense is loaded. Like, what are your sort of things that pop up? What are you looking for here fantasy-wise for the Braves offense?
So I agree with your assessment. I think it is a loaded offense. But I'll also note, I think they kind of underperformed the last 2 years as a team, certainly did last year. And I'm looking for them to kind of rebound this year. You mentioned Acuna. I think he's the real key to a healthy Acuna. Acuna makes this offense run. And really like the emergence of Drake Baldwin. Would like to see Riley step back up Hopefully he's healthy now. He had some off-season surgery. I think Ha-Sung Kim was a really nice addition. He's got to stay on the field. He's had health issues, but he's a big step up from what they've had at shortstop the last few years. So it lengthens their lineup nicely. They're going to be missing Marcell Ozuna, but hopefully, Stremski and some others rotate through the DH. Maybe gives Profar a chance to DH some more. So I don't think that's a big loss. He did not look particularly good last year. I think the kind of the key question mark, or one thing I'm kind of thinking about fantasy-wise, is the Braves hired away the Mets first base coach, whose name escapes me, but was given a lot of credit for really jump-starting the Mets running game. And so I think it'll be kind of interesting to see if guys like Harris and Albies, Acuna probably doesn't even need any help, but there are some other guys that may be running a little more. If we see a repeat from what this coach was able to do with the Mets last season. So that's one I'm kind of thinking about in the back of my mind.
Yeah, Anton Richardson is the guy from the Mets. Before that, he was with the Giants for a few years, and he replaces Tom Goodwin, who himself was a speedster, but apparently couldn't quite teach them all how to optimize on the steel front. I'm with you. I'm usually always heavy in on the Braves. It's really unfortunate what's been happening on the injury front the last few years. I'm unabashedly always into Michael Harris II, and he was a late second round, early third rounder. I think he started slipping into the 40s in drafts, and I was just all over him. And that first half of the season was atrocious. Definitely stepped back up in the second half. We're still waiting for him to get a meaningful batting order placement, right? And even now, you're looking at roster resources, he's in the bottom half of the lineup, but the price is more reasonable. It's in the 90s. You've got Olsen and Riley, nice, solid. A big difference between them in ADP, by the way. I'm looking at the last seven draft champions leagues, dating back to basically the last 3 weeks or so. And Matt Olson's got a 58 ADP. Austin Riley feels like a real good deal there at 84. So I really like a lot of this offense. I feel like Jerkson Profar is kind of an underrated outfielder in that area where he's going. It's like round 12, around pick 180, 185. Just somebody that you look at his half season numbers, and we hate to prorate things like that, but you look at Profar, the 2 seasons ago, then you look at his half season last year, you look at the team context. And to me, he just feels like a really good deal. I'm clicking on that button as much as I can. So really just over the moon about the squad. And then Ozzie Albies is just like the forgotten man. Like nobody cares about Ozzie Albies, the former accumulator. Is there any case or scenario where you're clicking the Aussie button?
I have not done so yet, but the price is much more attractive these days. And I think he's definitely in play where he's going. He's got to stay healthy. But the underlying skills are really not that good. I mean, you mentioned him, called him the accumulator, and that's what he is. He needs those plate appearances to really drive the counting stats. But where he's going, it's the best price on him in years. So I agree he's in play now. I also like Profar. I just drafted Riley in the current DC that I'm doing now. So definitely agree with you. And if these guys can add, 5 to 10 stolen bases on top of, their usual production, it gets quite enticing.
On the pitching front, we mentioned Robert Suarez there helping bulk up the bullpen with Iglesias. And on the starters, there's, of course, Chris Sale. He's going in the early third round of 15-teamers. You got the Spencers, who literally could go off at any time. You could usually big expectations from there. But one is sort of a rising star, the younger Schwellenbach. And Spencer Strider, after being the best pitcher in baseball before Paul Skeens and was around and before Tariq Skubal was really Tariq Skubal, Spencer Strider is going around 101, and it was a rough season, right? There was a stretch where he was horrific, then he was good again, and then he was just back to just a little bit over average, and then the ratios were getting wrecked. What are your expectations for Spencer Strider and then also Spencer Schwellenbach on the innings count?
Yeah, I right now I'm not drafting either one of them. I happen to really like Schwellenbach. Last year, he got off to a fantastic start. He had increased his velo, but then managed to develop a hairline fracture in his elbow. He did not have surgery, and we haven't seen him since. And so he's kind of in that group of players where I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach. If he looks good in the spring and his velo's intact and he's healthy, then I'm ready to kind of jump back in. The price is kind of high, but I really like the skills. Strider, right now, I'm off him at his current price. I did not like how he looked last year. He did not look like the same pitcher to me. The velo was way down. He's kind of still a two-pitch pitcher mostly. He was really getting hit hard repeatedly. The control wasn't great. I guess if he – there's always a chance another year removed from the surgery, he's going to be better. And so I'm kind of reserving judgment to see how he looks in the spring as well. But right now, I'm not kind of, taking him with a seventh or eighth round pick. A little too steep for me.
Yeah, I'm noticing myself grabbing a lot of Spencer Strider on underdogs, where the price is pretty good there, and on some gladiators. But usually he's going a little bit before. I have him around ADP, maybe a little bit above. But usually I see him, somebody's taken him a little bit before. Trying to build the super staff, right? Because a lot of times you're building staffs this time of year, and if Strider's your number three, and then there are some other sort of gems later, like big name guys that you're expecting to bounce back, and you can kind of build up a great rotation by name, but then of course reality sets in and baseball happens, life happens, and then it doesn't always come to fruition. But hey, sometimes those years happen. You get lucky. You hit on all those players. Hurston Waldrop is one of their top prospects. He had a nice cup of coffee with the squad last year. He made 9 starts in a relief appearance, posted an ERA under 3. Almost a K per 9, struggles on the walk side a little bit with the control. He's pretty young, not yet 24. Waldrop was their first round pick in 2023, but just a couple seasons in the minors, also spent some time injured, but he's another interesting prospect. Of course, they've got Ronaldo Lopez in the mix, maybe some Grant Holmes. Bryce Elder is still there lurking. So anything else there on the pitching front?
Yeah, no, I'm Waldrop is one of the players who kind of confuses me. I'm not really sure what to do with, I looked into him a little bit last year. Down in AAA, made 19 starts, a little shy of 92 innings, pitched to a 4.42 ERA and a 1.47 whip. And then he comes up to the majors and pitches to a 2.88 ERA, 1.19 whip. So which pitcher is he? He has, decent strikeout stuff, but he walks a lot of batters. And I guess I've had chances to draft him and haven't yet done so. But I that might be me missing out and being a little too cautious on him. But I find it a little uneasy seeing him kind of get rocked at AAA last year. So anyway, that's... kind of curious what you think on him.
Yeah, well, so the one thing is, if you are into Waldrop, you're going to get him at a little bit of a better price point than you would have a month ago, because he was going somewhere closer to 220. Like way at that point, it was way ahead of guys like Merrill Kelly and Ryan Nelson, and he was going really high. And then in every draft I was in, he was always sitting there way past his ADP. And at that point, I remember looking at roster resource, and as we know, a lot of people this time of year, there's not a lot to go on. And obviously, Jason R. Martinez does amazing work there with Fangraphs, with roster resource, and a trusted source. And so Waldrop was sitting outside of the top five at the time. And so I realized that sort of influenced the price. He's back in there in the top five. But then again, these are all just estimations. These are guesses. The spring training hasn't even happened. Like, people will get injured. But I think, so from what I've read, he's going to get every opportunity to crack that rotation from the beginning. And I think he will. I think he will struggle with his control. I think if you are looking at a you know, closer to like round 18, 20. I think he's a better, a decent shot around there. So that's somebody I would consider. Ronaldo Lopez. I mean, you're talking about late, like 30s in draft champions, somebody who had, you know, it was a little bit of luck, but it wasn't just, you know, he was really good two seasons ago when he had insanely low ERA. So you're not going to get 150 innings from him, but I think he's somebody you can piece together in DCs.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think the price on him is, it's worth the gamble on health, but it is a gamble. I don't, you know, with AJ Smith-Shawver having Tommy John and stuff, I think they're pretty good locks to, you know, to start the year in the rotation. I mean, they got Bryce Elder, but I mean, I think we've been there, done that before. So I think Waldrop and if Lopez is healthy, will be the fourth and fifth starters. At the price, I think Lopez is a reasonable gamble, especially if he's healthy. And if he is, I would expect the price to start climbing in the spring. Waldrop might be a starter on a very good team. I could see taking the gamble on him in the hopes that the control improves. I haven't been able to click it yet, but still have time.
Let's jump to the Philadelphia Phillies as we usually do, Mike and I, off pace already. That was a 14-minute Atlanta Braves overview, so we'll be out of here by midnight. But the Philadelphia Flyers, hockey in the head. Yeah, Flyers are doing all right. They re-signed Kyle Schwarber. Makes a lot of sense. They added fallen star Adolis Garcia, turning 33 this year. He's going to be playing out there in right field. And on the pitching side, they added Brad Keller. They traded away Matt Strom. And so a lot of questions here as far as, tackle whatever you want here, but will they re-sign Real Muto? Right now they're staring at Rafael Marcon and Garrett Stubbs as their catcher, and I just don't see them going into the year with that. Are they going to trade Alec Bohm? What are they going to get back for him? Will Bryce Harper, who was apparently called by, I forgot by whom, not elite, and then he was wearing
Dombrowski,
right? Hey, by his own GM, why not? Was wearing a not elite shirt. You know, he'll be kind of fired up this year. And then rookie Justin Crawford, a hits machine, top prospect. What sort of expectations we have for him? Yeah, let's talk about this. Tackle whatever you want there.
Yeah, I think this is a really high quality team that should compete to be in the World Series. I really like a lot of what they did. I like the Schwarber signing, obviously. I like how they have boosted their bullpen a little bit. I mean, Duran is going to be a fantastic closer. They retained Alvarado. They signed Brad Keller, who looked really good last year for Chicago in the bullpen role. I think they got a pretty good staff. And when if Wheeler could make it back in the first month or so, it turns into a fantastic staff. Obviously, Aaron Nola is a question mark, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, Andrew Painter's a bit of an enigma. He was, you know, the elite starting pitching prospect, and then he got hurt and was pretty bad last year on his return. So it'll be interesting to see another year out. I would expect Castellanos to be traded. I don't know how much they're going to get from Adolis Garcia, but I think he's at least a better fielder than Castellanos. So that's probably a defensive plus. Justin Crawford's an interesting late play. He's going to get a chance to win the center field job. He's one of those no power but super fast guys who could steal a lot of bases. I think they really could use JT Realmuto back. I'm thinking for their sake, they should have a plan B if that doesn't happen, because I don't think they want to go into the season with their two current catchers. But, I don't know that they trade Alec Bohm. I don't know. I guess I don't fully understand why there's this need to get rid of this guy. He's not a power hitter. He's not going to grow into a power hitter. But he's a pretty solid player with a good average, and he's put up some pretty nice RBI numbers. I mean, he doesn't belong in the cleanup spot, and that's but that's not really necessarily his fault. I mean, I can see if they do sign like a Bregman or something, then he would become redundant and you'd want to trade him. But I don't know that I'd be looking to dump him. One thing I am watching, I read a report that the Phillies were thinking of flipping Schwarber and Harper in the lineup. And I thought that was interesting. Schwarber has really excelled with Harper kind of giving him protection. But if Bohm is cleanup or pretty much anyone else they have isn't giving Harper much protection. And so there was an article discussing that the Phillies were thinking about flipping them and maybe having Schwarber give Harper some protection. And that might help Harper along a little bit. I do think Harper bounces back. I do love the talent. He's got to stay on the field for 140 to 150 games to really step up. But I think the skills are still intact.
Hey, what's interesting, I'm looking at the original like draft details from this lineup, and more than half of this lineup were pretty high first round picks. I mean, you had way back in 2010, Bryce Harper was the first overall pick. Of course, not to them. You know, these guys are drafted by other teams and all, but Trey Turner and Kyle Schwarber were drafted 13th and 4th overall in the same draft back in 2014. Alec Bohm was a 3rd overall pick in 2018. Justin Crawford, 17th overall in 2022. And on the ADP front, it's kind of it's top heavy with the offense where you have Schwarber and Trey Turner are second rounders. You got Bryce Harper, a 4th rounder. Then you got a big dip to everybody else. And I think this is an area that it deserves an extra look, because I'm really big on it and always recommend get in on players that are a little undervalued on offenses that you know are likely going to smash. That are in, it's a good home park. It's a good core. And these things just sort of they breed on one another, right? Like when they're hot, they're all hot and they're scoring 10 plus runs. So I think there's some, like Adolis Garcia, somebody that we've seen hit 30 and 35 and steal 20 bases before. And then all of a sudden the bat speed's been way down the last couple of years. But then there's also the other factor of Texas has just been this past year, they have they've had serious issues, right? Like guys that were friends, like Marcus Semien and Corey Seager were beefing, and now Semien's been traded and Jonah Heim not even trying. Like there've been real major issues there in that Rangers clubhouse. And so maybe getting Adolis out of there and, you know, around being a winner again, maybe it helps, perk them up a little bit, and you're looking at a good value at 250. So, those guys are all interesting to me. And then Brandon Marsh is another one who I think is just a bit sneaky. He's somebody that, we don't really target heavily because he's typically like a platoon guy, but he did hit 280 last season, and the expected batting average is a little lower than that. But what I liked about him was, he's always his Statcast numbers are always decent. He's always around 8-9% barrel, which it's a little right around average. But then the exit velocity is always around 91 miles per hour, and his contact rate went up a lot last year, so up to 78%. Usually it's around 73. So I liked some of those things, and the fact that maybe he may not platoon, we'll see how that all works out and who else they sign. But maybe Brandon Marsh ends up being a good deal where he's going.
Yeah, I think that's a good call there. I agree. And you mentioned Adolis Garcia and kind of the clubhouse issues in Texas. I think another aspect is the park issues. Texas was a extreme pitcher's park last year, and that probably impacted his numbers as well as you mentioned Marcus Semien's numbers. It'll be interesting to see if these guys are able to put together better hitting seasons outside of Texas.
On the staff, of course, you mentioned Wheeler hopefully coming back in the first month. I believe he's already playing catch. Tell me what you think about Andrew Painter. And then also, what about Christopher Sanchez, where he is going now? Are you comfortable drafting him? Say you had like the 4th pick. You grab Bobby Witt, I think Whitfield, right? Or 3 or 4. And then you've got Sanchez sitting there around Yamamoto. They're like the 4 and the 5 going in the 2nd round. Are you clicking on the Chris Sanchez button? Are you believing for a follow-up extraordinary season?
I think Sanchez belongs in that group. I'm not sure. I think I would lean Yamamoto. I might lean Gilbert. But Sanchez is right right, kind of in there. I think he belongs as an SP1. I think he's in that kind of 4 to 8 range for starting pitchers, but I'm still kind of placing him where I think he goes. And Painter, yeah, I don't know what's the deal with him. He just did not pitch well last year. And so I guess I think he still has the prospect pedigree, but he got beat up pretty well in AAA last year. You know, it's just first year back from 2 years of injury. So I think, he's certainly entitled to a mulligan. He was a highly regarded pitching prospect. I think he'll be better another year removed from his health issues. But at this point, I don't know what we're getting from him.
Next up, the New York Mets. And it's always funny, I think. So I love my Dodgers, been following them since I was a kid. But also, yeah, I'm a fantasy guy. I'm, content and everything. And I'm also a jokester. Maybe my jokes aren't always funny. Maybe they come off kind of, more daddy jokes. But like, if I'm saying something about the Mets on Twitter, like, it's not personal. I don't hate the Mets. I don't hate most things. And I definitely don't hate any baseball teams or organizations. But I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because a lot of the Mets fans are just so like sensitive about things, but just kind of fun to kind of, poke the bear on that front. And also there is just something on the curse side. There's just something that happens over there when players get over there. But what I'm not understanding now is what they're doing with their team. They, of course, on the pitching side, they added Devin Williams and Luke Weaver, Edwin Diaz off to the Dodgers. They traded Brandon Nimmo for Marcus Semien. They added Jorge Polanco and they traded away Jeff McNeil. And, as I look at the offense, sure, of course, Juan Soto is still there and Lindor. But I'm kind of looking at the rest of this offense and it just, for me, feels a little lacking. It feels not very Metsy. And I wonder if they're going to sign one of these big boys, a Bregman, a Bellinger, someone here that's still available.
Yeah, it would be hard to believe that they're done. I think they're going to miss Edwin Diaz. Devin Williams still has really good stuff under the hood, despite a rough year. Luke Weaver, I think, can be an excellent setup man who could also fill the closer's role if needed. But it's hard to say that's an upgrade. I would say it's a downgrade from last year. And, on the hitting side, they're definitely worse than they were last year. I mean, Alonso, those are very big shoes to fill, and Polanco doesn't do it. And after last year, I think it's reasonable to feel like, maybe the defense got a little better with Semien, but his numbers last year were a far cry from what Nimmo was doing. So I think it's I think it's for Met fans' sake, I hope that there's more to come and that there's going to be at least one or two bigger names added to this lineup. But I also, I look at their starting rotation and I see a lot of questions too. What are we going to get from Senga? Manaea had a rough year. I do think he bounces back, but we've got to see it, and he's got to stay healthy. Clay Holmes will be in his second year as a starter. Peterson has, kind of been inconsistent. And then you got McClain, who looks great, but right now he's the ace, and he could fill that role, but I kind of was expecting them to address starting pitching this offseason, and they have yet to do so. So if I'm a Mets fan, I'm pretty disappointed so far in the offseason moves, but I would have to think there's more to come. Let me throw one back at you. So Juan Soto is kind of like now in many drafts going number four after Ohtani, Judge, and Witt. And he had an awesome year last year, awesome player, obviously. And if he has a repeat of last year, then he certainly deserves to be up at number four. How much does the absence of Alonso kind of impact where you would slot Juan Soto in the first round? Because I guess I'm kind of hesitant now at four, not knowing if who what bat they may or may not add to that lineup. It is, if Jorge Polanco is the cleanup batter behind Juan Soto, as roster resource lists now, then I think Juan Soto could be walked maybe 200 times this year. I don't know.
Yeah, and it reminds me, it's a couple, three seasons ago, I remember, when Juan Soto did not have an amazing fantasy year. He's still always good. And I just remember something that the great Phil Dussel said about why he just didn't like Soto in the first round. It's because he walks too much and he's not really getting those counting cats. And he was right that season. The next couple of seasons, of course, with the Yankees, when you have all that protection, all that massive team, it makes a big difference. And then last year, Pete Alonso is a runs batted in machine. Like, somebody's on base, Alonso's going to get you there. He's going to hit a bomb. He's going to get a single. If you're on second, Soto will get there. So I wonder if maybe do we just have Juan Soto at number four by default? Isn't that something that we need to really be thinking about? Like, I need to look back at my rankings. I like Acuna better. Why don't I have Acuna over Soto? I'm letting the market dictate, my ranking. I shouldn't do that. And I think I'm going to go back and look at that. I don't think Juan Soto is the locked in number four, especially in this, he's an absolute, bona fide, in the mix with Jose Ramirez and Ellie and all those guys. But I don't know. I don't think he's going to steal all those bases again. He could hit 40 home runs, but will the counting cat suffer? The average is not the 300 plus guy he once was. So yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, just something I'm wondering, how much the absence of Alonso impacts Soto's fantasy value if he's being a little overdrafted at four.
I think it will.
Are you in on the Nolan McLean trade? Because he is, I think he's, kind of going in like the sixth round, maybe the seventh in some drafts, but it wouldn't shock me if that starts moving up as we get closer to March.
Nolan McLean is the NFBC darling. Like, he's a New York Met. There's always a New York tax to be paid. So many of our fans, players, a lot of our best players, volume guys, are huge Mets fans. And you can be a good fantasy player and still be a little, and be subjective on these things. You're like, okay, and you want to get a guy like that. But it is a New York tax that people are paying on Nolan McLean. And I'm seeing him in a DC going as high as the early fifth round. So that's in the 60s now. And this is your ultimate helium guy. You're going to see over the next couple of months, especially in spring training, he's looking good. He's going to get, he's like, the Chris Sanchez, Robbie Ray, all the guys, that we saw surging up the draft boards. It's going to happen. That's not to say he's not an amazing pitcher or not somebody that can't be the next, kind of the next group of sort of elite guys. It's definitely possible. Just because of the price, I don't see myself clicking on him very much, and maybe perhaps to my own detriment.
Yeah, it's a tough call. I mean, there's this group of really attractive young starting pitchers that are all came in last year, most of them middle of the year. And I got to say, as I dig into him more, McLean probably is my favorite if the cost was the same for all of them. But I'm not. Yeah, and I did pick up a share. I got him, I think, in the seventh round of one DC, so I do have one share, but I'm not sure how much I'll be on him if the price keeps rising.
And you made a good point about the staff. Of course, you're looking at a lot of question marks there. David Peterson, Clay Holmes, Sean Manaea, who I do like, as you do, and Kodai Senga. But they also have a lot of really great pitchers in the minors who have also come up for a few starts here. You had basically the minor league pitcher of the year last year, top fantasy value if you're playing minor league fantasy, Jonah Tong. And you got Brandon Sprout is in the mix as well. Christian Scott should be back. So and they'll probably add an arm. So and I don't know. Eventually, Tyler McGill might rise from the dead. I don't know if he's Tommy John. So, no. Probably not.
No. But, yeah, no, I mean, I think reinforcements are coming. I'm not sure how ready all of them are to like start the season in the rotation, but those young guys should be available to them during the season. I mean, I think McLean is is an ace right now, but Tong and Sproat and Scott should be available to them. So maybe they don't spend a ton on starting pitching, but you'd certainly, looking at their rotation now, you'd certainly want one more strong starter to enter the season. I think they're at least, you know, if the goal is, you know, not just to be good, but if the goal is to be a championship contending team, they need at least one more good bat, if not two, and I would say one more starting pitcher.
Yeah, right now they're looking like the clear number three team there in the NL East. We can definitely save a lot of time by just briefly touching on the Washington Nationals, who are, you know, as I joked on the old social medias today, that is the way to profit with streaming this year. Just go after that pitching staff. It is absolute horrendousness. Sure, Mackenzie Gore might get traded. Maybe Cade Cavalli takes a step up. But, you know, Brad, the Year of Our Lord is in this rotation. Josiah Gray, former gas can, maybe current gas can, is coming back. Foster Griffin, the 30-year-old left. I mean, it's just atrocious. The bullpen, you know, we touched on it with Dan Thompson last week in his pod. There's just not a lot going on here. And then they traded away Jose Ferrer. They got Harry Ford, my boy, a guy I've been following for quite some time, wondering if he might be like this year's Agustin Ramirez. Like, does he have a chance to make the team, or are they going to roll with the ruin everything for us by playing the Kyber Ruiz, Riley Adams combo?
Yeah, the way Kyber played last year, I think he's got a shot. I think he has a good shot to make the team, I would hope. But yeah, no, Harry Ford's interesting. I honestly think they have some interesting bats. You know, I mean, James Wood has a lot of skill. Abrams, Dalen Lyle, it looked really good last year. I think people are expecting more from Cruz. Garcia, you know, has some power speed. Hassel looked good at times. You know, Brady House, I think, was a little disappointing, but he's a high prospect with playing time. I could see him taking a step up in the second year. So from a fantasy perspective, I actually think there's some sneaky talent to be mined in the lineup, but the pitching staff is, yeah, it's pretty awful. I mean, I think I have a couple of Cade Cavalli shares late, just kind of betting on the prospect pedigree and another year, you know, kind of removed from his health issues. But and I've had trouble warming up to Mackenzie Gore, really. I'm too I prioritize whip a lot, and he just has been a whip killer every year. So I've never been on Mackenzie Gore. Strikeouts are great. I just he's not one that I tend to gravitate towards.
You have to be in a very specific situation, I believe, to draft Mackenzie Gore, because when you're looking at him around 200, 220 ADP, your rotation at that point, and with your relievers, you want to have like the low whip guys, or say you went pitching heavy early and maybe you've got some control pitchers who don't necessarily, you know, get you over 9K9. And then Gore, you just want the strikeouts and you can take a little bit of whip damage. But most teams, most drafts, we're not really always in that position. Like, you don't want to take on a 1-3 whip just for the strikeouts. So I'm totally with you there. And especially when you know you're probably not getting the wins there. So he would obviously be well suited in a different place. I agree with you. Yeah, there's obviously James Wood in the second, third round, CJ Abrams, lots of stolen bases. There are some guys there. One note on Dalen Lyle. I think he's probably fair priced in that range. A couple of things on him. He doesn't hit the ball all that hard. It's a little around league average and hadn't in the minors either. And also, there's a little bit of a history of getting caught stealing. I don't know how much he'll run this year, but last year he got caught six times in 14 appearances. But he hit 299, had an expected of 305. He does look like a player and somebody that will be in the middle of that lineup. Miami Marlins here, not much on the trade front or signing front. They did sign Christopher Morel. They got Pete Fairbanks not long after Ronnie Henriquez went down for the season. And, you know, my first thought is, you know, you look at this team and obviously they made some improvements last year. And my first thought is the rotation looks pretty good. And secondly, this is a fast offense. Like, this offense, I mean, they just added Esturi Ruiz, who I don't necessarily expect to play a lot. But you got Jacob Marcy. This kid is a stud. He had a great, you know, half a rookie year. Xavier Edwards. You got there's some good hitters on this team, but just what are your question marks here? Who are your targets?
Yeah, all-star Kyle Stowers, who really had a nice breakout, and Ramirez. No, I think there's a lot to like in this on this team. They were competitive going into September last season. They're not a bad team. I think Fairbanks really helped stabilize the bullpen. Getting to him is a little shaky, but I think Fairbanks can do well there. I really like the starting rotation. If Braxton Garrett is healthy, he had some nice seasons previously. Edward Cabrera seemed to take a nice step up. Yuri Perez seems like a star in waiting. And, you know, don't sleep on Sandy Alcantara, who had a very strong second half. So, yeah, I think they even Ryan Weathers, he has to stay healthy. But he was, throwing 99 at points last year, looking pretty good. So I think they actually are a sneaky competitive team in a tough division for them. On the hitting side, really intrigued by Marcy, although his price is pretty high for a guy who hasn't played all that much. I like Agustin Ramirez. I have trouble kind of clicking on Xavier Edwards and these guys that have like no power whatsoever. I guess I don't want to kind of feel that desperate for speed in the 11th, 12th round. So he's a guy I haven't really been clicking on. I do think he gives you average as well, and he should be okay in runs. But I have trouble just the way I like to build teams, going with these, guys who are going to hit fewer than five homers. I'd be more inclined to wait a few more rounds and grab an Otto Lopez, who I kind of like as a, 15-15 type player at a pretty good price.
Yeah, there's definitely some sneaky guys here. I mean, you only have two guys going in the top 100 ADP. Of course, Yuri Perez and the catcher, Agustin Ramirez, will be probably doing a lot of DHing. Rule 5 pick Liam Hicks ended up sticking with the team, having a pretty decent season. They let go of Nick Fortes. But Griffin Conine is somewhat of a sneaky guy, somebody with a lot of power in the minors that perhaps comes to fruition, likely in a platoon role. I wish Agustin Ramirez was like on, like, I don't know, it seems like on like the Yankees, right? Like somebody like that. You would love him on the Yankees, I bet, huh?
He was on the Yankees. I think he was part of a trade.
He came over, but if he was still on the Yankees, wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be. I think he's as long as they keep the DH spot open for him, I think he could have a great season. I think his glove needs a lot of work. One player that people should for deeper league should not sleep on is Joe Mack. Is their kind of catching prospect who has shown promise as a hitter with some power and is an excellent fielder.
Yes, Joe Mack, he's also rising up the draft boards. I've been seeing it. He's going in the around 29-30 in draft champions. All right, wow. That was a lot there on the AL NL East. Let's go to the Central. Not as many hot topics here, but the Milwaukee Brewers, they're just looking to shed. They're always looking to make a deal, get cheaper and still remain good. It's something they've done really well with. But they do need to make it to the World Series here. But no new hitters added. They did trade away Isaac Collins. They declined options on Rhys Hoskins, Danny Jansen. Nothing new on the pitcher front. I guess the big questions here are more so on the pitchers. So Jacob Mizorowski just kind of, I don't know. I feel like he's very polarizing. Like some drafts, like he's just not even being touched as ADP. Others, he's getting scooped up earlier than that. Of course, you got Brandon Woodruff here with sort of, can he stay healthy? How good will he be? And then the big question here is with the bullpen, because we've seen a massively rising price on Abner Uribe, who who, when healthy, is an elite closer, if he's a closer. But you need to get Trevor McGill out of the way there. Trevor McGill's, you know, kind of ripe for the trade pickings with his contract and the way the Brewers usually operate. So, but we haven't seen that trade come to fruition. How do you handle that with those closers? Are you even touching McGill or Uribe now that their ADPs are getting closer? And your thoughts on the Miz?
Yeah, so right now I haven't bid on either of those closers. I mean, it does seem like they could get away with trading Trevor McGill. I think they probably waited until all the other free agent closers are signed, and maybe now they want to see if any team needs a closer badly, see if they can get a better price for him. They certainly have shown a willingness to trade away their closers. And at the end of the year, it was Uribe closing. It's not clear whether that was kind of merit-based or just simply because McGill was coming back from injury. So I think that the case for Uribe is, you know, if McGill is traded, he should be the closer. And even if McGill is not traded, there's at least a decent chance that Uribe would close anyway. But it's still kind of risky to invest what's now, what, like a 6th, 7th round draft pick on that happening. I mean, would it be shocking if McGill was not traded? I don't know. I mean, I would bet he is traded, but it's not as sure thing for me. In terms of Mizorowski, you know, the talent is there. The strikeouts, I think, will be there. Of all the kind of the young really talented first-year pitchers that we alluded to earlier, where I said McLean was probably my favorite, I honestly, Mizorowski is probably my least favorite. And it's just simply the control. I have a tough time getting over. I take a look at his player page, and at every single stop from low A to the majors, he's carried a double-digit walk rate. And I just think it's really tough to get by on an extended basis with that. Major league hitters are used to dealing with extreme velo. And so I just, you know, the crazy motion, is he an injury risk? I think there's questions on him. Yeah, if he fell far enough, I can see, you know, considering him. But right now, I'd probably rank him last of the kind of the elite young starting pitchers that are being drafted aggressively right now.
And I'll be honest, I kind of like Logan Henderson just as much, if not more, for way, way less of a price. And he's somebody that is being shown as in the minors projected to start the season per Roster Resource. Of course, we're a couple months away here. Logan Henderson was absolutely splendid last season in 5 starts. It was pretty good in the minors too. And a lot better on the control front, more of a 7 to 9% you know, walk guy. Also, you know, strong strikeouts, 12 to 13% swinging strike rate. So I really like Logan Henderson. I feel like I picked up a lot of him in Gladiator, and I think he's one of those, you know, fallen values where, man, if he had just stuck around and not get, you know, sent down. And then also the elbow there, you know, of course, you get a little bit of an elbow thing at the end of the year, but he seems to be fully healthy going into the year. So we'll see about that group.
Yeah. And I'm very curious on Woodruff's health. I think, he's missed a lot of time the last 2 seasons. And at 32, turning 33, I think the questions about his health and durability are legitimate, especially when you're talking about a top 150 pick. But I think if he is healthy, people may be overlooking just how elite he's been. Since he became a full-time starter in 2019, in 6 seasons, he's had 4 of them with a sub-1 whip. And he's had multiple seasons under 3 ERA. I just think he's a, you know, for his career, he has a 3-1 ERA and a 103 whip.
Goodness.
I just think he's, you know, an elite pitcher with fantastic strikeouts. So, yeah, I, you know, if you told me that that Woodruff was going to pitch 180 innings, I would put him in the top 10 of all starting pitchers. But I'm kind of biased. He's always been a personal favorite of mine.
Yeah, same here. Woodruff is one of my highest rostered players in Gladiators. I did 22 of them and picked off Woodruff. Almost had to force myself not to draft him just to diversify a little bit. Usually a wise idea. The Cincinnati Reds, we don't have to spend too much time here. They traded for Dane Myers. They signed J.J. Bleda. So those guys, you know, lefty-righty split in the outfield. Doesn't look like they're going to be trading T.J. Friedl. Noel V. Marte is going to be in that outfield. Of course, he gives you third base eligibility. So my two main questions here, I guess let's hit the hitters and pitchers all at once. My four questions here are, Noel V. Marte, can he break out this year, unless you consider last year a breakout? Will Matt McClain suck again? Can Hunter Green compete for the Cy Young? And where are you on Chase Burns?
Yeah. Okay. So Noel V. Marte, I do like the skills. I was kind of disappointed in how he finished the year, but I like that he gained outfield eligibility. That outfield third base eligibility is really valuable. And I like that he runs some, and boy, when he connects, the ball flies. So I'm not sure he's a finished product. I do worry about strikeouts and just, you know, they were platooning him for portions of last year. So I'm not sure the team is fully bought into him, but I do like the talent. I think he's I think the price is fair on him. I wouldn't be chasing him up the draft board, but I do like the talent. Matt McClain, I'm probably ill-equipped to advise anyone on, because I was all over him last year, and that was a major miss for me.
Same.
I thought he looked really good in his 2023 debut, and I was expecting more even with a year off. And boy, he was just terrible. So I've looked under the hood a little bit, and I think he a lot's pretty similar. I don't see, you know, a huge decline in, you know, his strikeout rate. I mean, he improved his walk rate. I think the speed is legit. I am concerned about the average, but I don't know. I think he may be relegated to the bottom of the lineup until he proves he belongs elsewhere. And I'm taking a more cautious approach on him right now. I have my doubts, but it wouldn't shock me if he is at least better than he was last year. Chase Burns I like a lot. I think the health may be a little bit of a concern. He had some issues last year. I think the strikeouts can be massive. He maintained pretty good walk rates in the minors, and I think he has the stuff to succeed in Cincinnati. I think that, you know, getting to your question about Hunter Green, I think, you know, the pitchers that seem to do the best in Cincinnati are the ones who can strike guys out and try to limit the balls in play with that very friendly park. And I think Burns and Green and Lodolo all do that. I'm still trying to figure out how Andrew Abbott is so successful over the years, but I haven't done that yet. He just, I guess, knows how to pitch. But going back to your question, I think Hunter Green has Cy Young capability, but we've never seen the innings out of him. And mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the concern I have with using a third-round draft pick on him. I think the talent is there, and he's done it for two straight years with kind of dominating stuff, great ratios, including great whip. But yeah, 150 innings and then 107 last year. I want to see a 30-start season out of him. And if he does that, it wouldn't shock me if he won some awards.
Yes.
How do you see it?
Yeah, I see him not winning the Cy, but I see him like a very strong pick around where he's going. The problem is he's just so popular and just so dynamic in his, you know, sort of start to start type thing, like, you know, points league star. I mean, if Hunter Green is just really kind of rising up the draft boards, and for every time nobody wants to click on a Blake Snell, they'll click Hunter Green like a whole round before. And sometimes it's tough. It's all about, you know, the potential of what you can get a little bit later when you're, or what you can get in the new price for that Hunter Green is going for. If he's now going to be like a third rounder, it's a lot riskier. And so I think he's a lot more fairly priced, you know, where he had been going previously. But I see him start to be one of those helium guys. I do think he's a stud. I like Chase Burns a lot too. I have no problem going there. Matt McClain, I was with you. Really, that one really hurt hard. I can't always catch myself clicking on the Matt McClain button. I could see him moving up in the lineup. I see maybe a little bit of reduction in strikeouts. I feel like we're going to hear something about him retooling his game in the offseason, how he's worked to cut down strikeouts. So that's just a random gut prediction that you'll see something about Matt McClain reclamation project that'll get us all buying in. And then Noelvi Marte, it's funny. I have been drafting him. I've been into him, and I hadn't really dug in. And this is my bad as literally content. You guys trust me, but like, I didn't realize how bad Noelvi Marte's splits were. Like, he is horrendous against lefties. It's like a career 64 WRC plus ISOs, like, you know, like 0.05. Like, it's bad, bad. And so you're looking at this where it shows him as a full-time guy, potentially. He could very easily be replaced mid-game. You know, the manager's going to play a lot of, you know, the lefty-righty stuff, you know, especially if they're against the Brewers, who have a lot of lefties in the pen. There's no reason to leave Noelvi Marte in the lineup in those later innings. So that's a really good point. So something I'm looking at. The one thing I'll mention about the NL Central, right now it does load up to be pretty righty heavy. There are a couple of rotations that are all righties. And then, of course, the St. Louis Cardinals, like, you know, no Sonny Gray. You've got, like, random guys in that rotation. It's got a lot worse. So, you know, those will obviously be some fun games.
Yeah.
Chicago.
For a team that was on the borderline of the playoffs, I've been a kind of disappointing all season for Cincinnati. Like, I was kind of hoping they would be a little more aggressive in adding to what they have.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Will, you still got Will Benson on the roster. You add, you know, you're trading for Dane Myers. Like, I know they've been talking about adding some guys, but.
So where are you on Sal Stewart? What do you think of him? Looking into him, he looks pretty promising, although he's also climbing the draft boards.
Yeah, I think Sal Stewart and how much he plays, at least early on, depends on Spencer Steer and how that outfield manifests. Because Spencer Steer's been dealing with some injury stuff the last season or so, and he's slotted to play first base, but he can also play in the outfield. And Sal Stewart is, you know, 22, first round pick. Like, he's a stud, and I think he will be a stud, and that's a good ballpark for him. But yeah, it kind of need an injury for him to really, you know, kind of go off for full playing time. And we've seen his price dip a little bit. So now I've seen him now going after Wilson Contreras and Kyle Manzardo, whereas, you know, 3 weeks ago he was going ahead of them. And again, this is a lot of roster resource driven, because now you're seeing Sal Stewart as a short side platoon guy on the bench, which isn't really who Sal Stewart is. He's going to be, you know, a full-time guy eventually. I just don't know when that is, but I have not been clicking on the Stewart button that much. You?
No, not yet, but I am intrigued.
Chicago Cubs, they lost Kyle Tucker. They still have a nice core of hitters there, of course. Pete Crow Armstrong with the massive breakout last year. You still got Saya Suzuki, Ian Happ, Nico Horner, Michael Bush. Just lots of, you know, salt of the earth type of mid-round fantasy guys you could, you know, sort of sink those roto teeth into. And then, you know, Matt Shaw, Dansby Swanson, it's a good team. And then you've got a couple of prospects trying to make the cut there, Owen Cassie and Moises Ballesteros. So, you know, what do you think about this offense? Who are your targets? Are they going to sign anyone else?
Yeah, no, I think it's still a pretty solid lineup. Ballesteros is a really interesting hitter. I think he's good. Dansby Swanson is just so consistent. I like Matt Schaar to be better this year. I like what I saw out of him after they sent him down to the minors and he came back, was hitting the ball with more velocity, more aggressive. He was running.
So you're saying we might see a turning point with Matt Schaar?
Yeah, I could see him being quite attractive. And I it's always nice to be able to get kind of double-digit stolen bases out of a corner infielder. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of struggled in the stolen base category. It's the one I kind of prioritize the least when I'm drafting, probably. But being able to get those stolen bases from a corner infielder is very nice for a lot of builds. The player I'm kind of struggling where to rank is PCA. He looked so great in the first half and he struggled mightily in the second half. I guess I trust the speed. I'm not sure if we're going to see another, kind of 30 home run season from him. The average was pretty scary in the second half. It was very strong in the first half. What do you think about Suzuki? Do you think he kind of belongs at like the 2-3 turn where he's been going a lot of drafts, or are you kind of hesitant with the way he finished the season?
Pete Crow, I have drafted him in Gladiators. I don't know if I'm there in a main event, if I could do it. Just somebody that's streaky, feels like there's a little bit of a downside. I agree with you. I don't think he hits 30 home runs again. But man, those numbers are just eye-popping. And that's even with a huge drain last year. Like, he was really bad for quite some time. We, over on FTN, our model projections, he's coming in at 51st overall. And of course, this is, keep in mind, we've devalued stolen bases a little bit. So this is where you're not going to see Ellie De La Cruz as a first rounder. I'm going to mess with the formula a little bit more on the back end. But right now, we're projecting him for 100. This is, again, 135 games. Of course, if he plays 150, it's a whole different story. This is a little low, but it's 69 runs, 75 RBI, 30 stolen bases, and 23 home runs. So that's probably a little low, but also wouldn't be shocking to see that. It's hard for me to click on him there where he's going at the end of the second, early third, especially based on the type of talent I'm passing up, and especially if I'm looking at a closer, in certain types of builds.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. Although I have to note that we're all just so susceptible to recency bias. Because imagine if he had the second half he had in the first half, and then he had the first half he had in the second half.
Yeah,
and finished the year like the way he started. I think I think there'd be a lot more enthusiasm about drafting him. But I don't know. He's a guy I'm still kind of struggling with where to place. But I do like the Cubs lineup. I really liked the way Michael Busch hit last year. And he was hitting lefties too. And hitting leadoff gives him plenty of at-bats. And I thought it was a really nice breakout from him. And, other guys are just, they're very consistent performers. Warner, Happ, Suzuki, very good from year to year. Swanson. I don't like their starting rotation that much, though.
No.
I don't know what your thoughts are.
I don't love it either. Just a quick note, if you're in underdog drafts, the best ball, these are perfect points guys. These guys, they get on base, they're, racking up doubles, these Horners, Happ, Suzuki's, Swanson, Kelly, these are really good targets. Whereas Ian Happ would be a 180 overall pick, 150 maybe in a 12 or 15 round roto league. He's a 40 top 50 guy in these points format. Wow. So Ian Happ is point stud. Yeah. And then one other note, you just know that there's some signings, there are things to come, because They've got 34-year-old Tyler Austin, if you remember that name. He's currently showing on the bench as on the bench roster. And Scott Kingery, the ghost of Scott Kingery, still hanging out on that roster.
Yeah, it's not great. It's just kind of a team that, you know, between Wrigley and everything around Wrigley is seemingly making money hand over fist, but comes to off season and they act like a small market team at times.
It's a pretty old rotation. So outside of Cade Horton, who's 24, and I wouldn't be surprised as their best pitcher this season, the other four guys, they're all 34 or 35. That's Matthew Boyd, Shota Imanaga, Jameson Taillon, and Colin Ray. This is a old bunch of dudes, so just something to keep in mind there. And then if you're looking on the, the prospects, it's not all the farm system isn't all that great. They got a kid named Jackson Wiggins I'm starting to see drafted in DCs. Jordan Wicks is still in the mix. Ben Brown, remember him when he torched all of our ratios. Really, the strength here is in the bullpen. They obviously had the breakout year with their current closer, Daniel Palencia. But then they signed four guys, like really solid contributors. They added Phil Maton, who was a top 10 reliever last season. Harvey, who could technically close for them. They got the lefty Hobie Milner, and then they got Jacob Webb, both from Texas. So actually, they picked up three Texas guys. What's going on here?
Yeah, no, they made a real effort to bolster the bullpen. And I guess the issue now for fantasy drafters is whether they're still comfortable taking Palencia as the closer, or does the existence of Maton and Harvey and kind of Palencia had some health issues down the stretch, whether that's, reason enough to kind of fade him a little bit.
I mean, Porter Hodge was the closer, the go-in closer before they signed Ryan Pressly this time last year. And he's like, buried down this reliever chart. It's like, I don't have the confidence to draft Daniel Palencia, no matter how good I think, because if he falters just a little bit, you got a guy stepping in easily there. Pittsburgh Pirates. This is a fun team. This is a very exciting team here. They're making some moves. They traded for Brandon Lowe. They got the password, Jay Garcia there. I knew how to pronounce his last name. All of a sudden, it escapes me. We'll just call him the password for a reason. Yeah. Jake Mangum. All of a sudden, his tweets started popping up. He's fired up to be there. And then Ryan O'Hearn, professional hitter, completely retooled hitter, Ryan O'Hearn. And, of course, the great Connor Griffin coming, the best prospect around. You read the article, hopefully, by Lucas Beery and his thoughts on Connor Griffin. Rob Silver cannot contain himself on Twitter, tweeting his love for Connor Griffin. Rob, I'm asking you to, cool that off a little bit, because a lot of people listen to you. So the price is getting high there on Connor Griffin. So what do you think of this team and that guy?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. After kind of never investing in the team, it looks like they're trying to be better this year, which I think is great. I was always a big Andrew McCutchen fan, and I hated when they had a really good team making the playoffs and they just needed, a little more push to maybe get them over the top, and the owner just wouldn't invest in the team. So it's nice seeing them kind of make some signings and kind of go for it. I mean, they have a really nice let me start with their strengths. They have a really nice pitching staff. I mean, Skeens is otherworldly. And I think Bubba Chandler has a chance to be really good. I think he has excellent stuff. I think he got bored down in AAA, and maybe that says something about him. But when they called him up, except for one bad start, he was pretty impressive. And they got some other guys who I think have some skills. And they have a good park for their pitchers. So I've been mining that a little bit. I like the O'Hearn signing a lot. I like the Brandon Lowe signing as well. He needs to stay healthy. He did last year, but prior to that, struggled with injuries. I think maybe he gets a break from the constant platooning that Tampa subjected him to at times and becomes an everyday player for them. But, you know, I was just really disappointed last year. I mean, O'Neill Cruz was terrible. I don't know what he is anymore. He can't hit lefties at all, so I think he is really no more than a platoon player. It'd be interesting to see if he can take a step forward. And I thought Brian Reynolds took a real step back last year. And he's now very attractively priced, I think, if you believe he can return to form. And I think he can, but it was quite a disappointing season for him. So that's kind of how I look at their team right now.
I'm a little bit excited about Pittsburgh. And I think Connor Griffin being there, I think he's somebody who can make an immediate impact. I think hopefully they treat him differently than they have prospects in the past and just let him just, you know, run with it. And they're kind of building a team around him. And I think it can help some of these guys like Brian Reynolds on the county category. So Reynolds might get a little bit of a bounce back. O'Neill Cruz, I've heard things about a family tragedy, something that affected him greatly in the second half, kind of turned into a platoon guy there towards the end. And obviously he's got, you know, can steal a lot of bases and can be really, really good, but I see a lot of people not clicking on him. But adding a guy like Ryan O'Hearn, who's, you know, completely turned himself around from who he was in KC, bringing leadership like him and Brandon Lau, it's really strong. And then you add to that the pitching staff, and I'm looking at their win total. Last I looked, it was at 73.5. That's sixth worst projected in the books. I think I'm looking at DraftKings here. They won 71 games last year, and then they won 76 each of the two seasons prior. And this looks like one of their better teams. So I don't know if that line has moved up. I'm sure it has with some of these recent signings. I don't follow it that closely, like our boy MLB Dream. But this still feels like there's a little room for profit on that 73.5. Just something there to think about. White Sox, by the way, no, we're not talking about the AL here. They're projected second worst at 65.5. And I'm kind of liking the White Sox too. I don't think they're going to be as bad as they were in years past.
Good call. I think they have an interesting lineup.
All right. Next up, we are wrapping things up with the St. Louis Cardinals in full rebuild. They've traded away Wilson Contreras. They're going to trade away Brendan Donovan. He might go to your Yankees, by the way. Have you heard about that?
I would like that.
I would like that very much. that Nolan Arenado might get dealt. They got rid of Sonny Gray. They've added, they've been making moves with Boston. They're just like picking up pitchers from them. They got, they signed Dustin May. And then they in trades, they got Richard Fitz, that is, and Hunter Dobbins, who's right now on the outside looking in, but I think he can crack that rotation. Kyle Leahy might get a chance to start there. Matthew Liberatore is looking like their ace at the moment. They look like the bottom dwellers there. Alec Burleson, by the way, he's going to play full-time first base there. Mason Wynn should have a nice little bounce back. And then I love Ivan Herrera. I would wish Ivan Herrera played somewhere that was not St. Louis, but I absolutely love that guy.
Yeah, no. Ivan Herrera looks like the best offensive player on this team, and he's an interesting call. I mean, I think the plan is for him to catch again, and so it's a question of how often do you think he's going to catch and how long it'll take him to gain. You know, at least if you play NFBC, you need 10 games at catcher to gain that eligibility. So, you know, you're looking at mid-April, late April, sometime in May. I guess it depends how often he's behind the plate. But he's a fantastic bat who also runs some for getting stolen bases out of a catcher is always a nice thing. I do like Burleson and Donovan, just very solid hitters with strong averages. I could see Wynn taking a step up. Nupar has skills if he can stay on the field. But this pitching staff is horrible to me. I don't know. It's not quite Washington Nationals, but I think you can stream against this staff as well.
Yeah, it doesn't look – I mean, last year I had a lot of targets in St. Louis just because there were so many – late round values happening. And that could also be the case this year again. I mean, maybe Jordan Walker comes to fruition. I'm not so sure. You know, Victor Scotta was all over last year. He got the stolen bases. He's kind of your later round. If you need somebody and, you know, you just need like that one little plug in there, but you know, he might end up being platooning. But I do like Yvonne Herrera a lot, even though he's UT only. I think he'll gain some catcher eligibility. And then Mason Winn, I do think, is a great value right now. And the pitching staff, I think I'm kind of staying away from altogether. Although for the price, like Kyle Leahy, where he's at now, I think he might be really intriguing because he's got some really solid stuff.
I guess people are voting on Riley O'Brien with the expectation of being the closer. Judge Romero in there as a lefty who may get some saves. And Matt Swanson has some very interesting stuff as a possible closer spec in the waiting.
Yes. I do like Riley O'Brien. He does have some issues that Dan Thompson brought up that do make sense, that, you know, maybe somebody like Matt Swanson could be better for the role eventually. I do think Jojo Romero is your top lefty in the pen, but this guy is honestly, like, I know a lot of baseball. I've never heard of Nick Rackett and Matt Pushard. So please excuse my baseball knowledge on this case.
Yeah, no, I it's going to be a disappointing team. It's not looking good. I definitely see this team as a last place team this season.
And then one other guy mentioned, JJ Weatherholt. I think once Arenado gets shipped, he'll make the team anyways from the beginning. He's just really their best prospect, their top guy, unless you've read or heard something different.
No, I would be very surprised if he doesn't make the team. I mean, he's had a couple months in AAA already, so I'm not sure what they would be waiting for. If they're obviously rebuilding, so why wouldn't you elevate your number one prospect who is crushing the minors and has, you know, played at all the levels? So I definitely think he's there. It'll be interesting, you know, depending on who gets traded. I'm not sure yet whether he's going to be tried out at third base or second base, but I do expect him to make the team.
Mike, thank you so much for doing this. We are not done. We're going to stop at this point, and sometime in the next few days, Mike and I are going to record a quicker one, just covering the NL West, because there is a lot of good stuff to get to over there. But you know, we've got a full pod here for you to digest. Hopefully, you took some notes along the way. But you know, any just from the 10 teams that we covered, are there any kind of players that stand out to you? Don't mind sharing that are just real undervalued draft targets for you that you want to make sure to get a piece of in your drafts?
Oh boy. Nothing coming immediately to mind. Sorry, you just caught me unprepared for that one.
No. You're just Hunter Dobbins, all the Dobbins shares.
I tried to highlight the guys I do like. I'll just throw out one. Jorge Polanco was kind of an afterthought last year in drafts, and he's gone pretty late this year. He had a very nice season. I mean, in Seattle, which is a tough park, hit 26 home runs. He stayed healthy for first time in a long time, 265 average. He threw in some bags, 78 RBIs. And if, in fact, he's going to hit, you know, cleanup or hit behind Juan Soto and Francisco Lindor, it's a better park for him. He could have a nice season, assuming health.
I like it because
I just drafted him.
Yeah, nice. On the clock as we speak, as we draft. You know, he is when he is healthy, he is an excellent, like real life baseball player, fantasy player. I think he's really solid. So I like that. I think he might be offer more protection than people expect there for Juan Soto. So everybody, till January 2nd, we have the 15% off. Use code FTN2026 over at FTNFantasy.com. Mike Mager, myself, and the rest of the team, we will take good care of you over there. So keep an ear out for the final preview pod here sometime in the next few days. And for Mike Mager, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you soon.